Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we discuss Bryson DeChambeau's big win and some big changes coming to the FedEx Cup playoffs next year.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have one if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers, and today I'm joined by Keeley Levins and Joel Beal. Guys, how's it going? Let's start with Bryson DeChambeau. A very impressive win at the Northern Trust. Joel, I know we were both out there for part of the week. It's not that easy of a course, and yet 18 under par wins it. I think we both were a little off on what the winning score would be.
Yeah, I thought we were thinking somewhere in the 7 to 8 under range.
Yeah, maybe 10.
Maybe that I'm sure it has something to do with the beatdown
that we took
from our media day entrance there. But no, it was an extremely impressive performance, especially how DeChambeau came coming in. This is the guy, since he hurt his shoulder at the John Deere Classic, had really been all over the map. He missed the cut at Belle Reve, really wasn't a factor at Carnoustie or Akron, had that infamous blow-up that kind of went viral, not only the driving range issue, but the inadvertent handshake controversy that stemmed from it. So this was a guy who was already on the Ryder Cup periphery, and because of the list of transactions really since his success early in the summer, I think a lot of people were thinking he needs to win to kind of insert himself into the conversation. And sure enough, when he needs it most, finds the winner's circle for the second time this year at two really big events. So given last year how we looked at DeChambeau as a guy who was more oddity than actual player, it's really been amazing the transformation we've seen in the past 13, 14 months.
Yeah, and you mentioned doing it when he had to. You know, a couple years ago, he was in the Web.com finals, and he won the first playoff event to wrap up his – so he does have that ability to kind of kick it into gear in key moments, which I think – bodes well for his Ryder Cup chances. I mean, Keeley, this guy has to be on the Ryder Cup now, right?
I'm so confused by him. because he has all these pieces that make like an absolutely clutch player, the kind of guy that you want on your Ryder Cup team. But then, as you were saying, he also has this side to his competitive personality that kind of makes him look like he's out of control. You know, and just like how quickly he can go from that totally out of control to winning a golf tournament. I mean, that's pretty volatile. And that brings up a lot of question marks for me.
Well, it's funny because, you mentioned some of these things, and it's amazing how, though, obviously they are still in your mind, Keeley, but when someone wins, we just kind of forget about for the most part.
Or we frame it in a different light.
He's crazy. Competitor.
Fiery. This is exactly what you – and we've seen this with Patrick Reed. Winning is a medicine for all of golf's woes. So, and same with Phil Mickelson. We've seen sometimes even with Jordan Spieth too. Sometimes his actions are construed in a different light. So I do think we have been a little hard on DeChambeau at times. That outburst video that everyone keeps showing at the driving range, I think a lot of that actually was stemming from he had come off such a good stretch of golf. I think he had, five top 10 finishes in his last 8 events, and then hurts his shoulder, had really lost his swing. So
he was frustrated more by the
injury. But how lost could he possibly have been to go from that to winning a couple weeks later?
This is true, and even if he was upset, it was a very melodramatic outburst.
Yeah.
Like, I think everybody who's ever picked up a club has lost it if they've ever even been lucky to find it. So, yeah, you're right. It was a display that definitely kind of raised up. He's also 24 years old. 24-year-olds will act this way at certain times. So, from a time when he absolutely needed it, it was such a good performance. And really the way he did it, too, of DeChambeau, if at least the last 2 years, he's really done it from tee to green. Finished 5th in strokes gained putting this week, which really shows you he's more of he's not just a one-dimensional guy. It'll be really interesting to see how he does this week, because I think really if he didn't cement it this week, a top 15, top 20 finish, it's going to be really, really hard for Furyk not to pick him.
I mean, he has to be on the team. And you mentioned the word fiery, and that's exactly how Tiger described him when he was asked about him. And, you know, Tiger's in this weird position right now where he's obviously going to make the team, but he's playing the role of vice captain, and he's weighing in on decisions. And if Tiger likes someone, and we've seen him play a bunch of practice rounds with him this year, gotta figure that helps. Now, and again, he finished ninth in the points. He just missed qualifying on his own merit. So you factor that in, then he wins a playoff event. He's got to be on the team.
This is true, although we've seen guys who finished ninth in the Ryder Cup standings in the past not make it. Yeah, granted, they didn't win in the
They were struggling, though. Yeah.
They were already correct.
How many guys have won two events this year, and not just any two events, marquee events, not majors, but the Memorial and a playoff event, you know, and the first playoff event with the actual, like, 100, you know, almost a full-sized field.
It's not just two wins. It's the runner-up at Bay Hill as well and a couple other top five finishes. So this is by no means a, you know, a two-tournament aberration. But really, it's the more interesting question to me is, did Tony Finau do enough to earn his Ryder Cup? Because it's kind of seemed like out of these spots that were still up, DeChambeau and Finau were two of the more popular picks, and they go one and two. So all of a sudden, is
I don't
does this week even matter? Or well, I guess they only have to make three picks this week. They still have a little bit of leeway for that final pick. But, man, for Brant Snedeker was the guy we were sitting last week talking about. Now he's hurt. Ricky Fowler, all of a sudden, a fifth spot could be open. It's funny. From something we thought the answers were all figured out, we have a couple more questions now going into the next 2 weeks.
It's
going
to be really interesting, not only the picks themselves, but the way they're staggered. Because, like you mentioned, I mean, Tiger and Phil are 100% on the team. I'd say Bryson DeChambeau is 99% on the team. But what if, you know, just to build the drama,
Furyk doesn't
name one of those guys. You know what I mean? Like, what if your name's Phil, DeChambeau, and Finau, doesn't name Tiger?
That would be savage.
I mean, just to kind of build. I don't know. I mean, I doubt he will do that. But who knows? They're kind of pulling out all the stops. They already had a press conference to announce the guys who made the team, which we already knew from math. So, you know, they definitely like to draw this whole process out. Back to DeChambeau, though, you mentioned his age, and that brought up an incredible stat.
Yeah.
Players under 25 to win three PGA Tour titles, win the NCAA Individual Championship, and a U.S. Amateur Champ. Bryson DeChambeau, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson. That's it.
Not bad company.
That's quite
a foursome. I mean, were you, you know, we were all knew this guy's potential and, you know, his final year as an amateur was pretty
incredible.
Historic. I mean, we knew that. But then, you know, and he had all that hype at that first Masters and everything, and he got
the
up
Masters,
to a start.
Yeah, he finished, I think, T4th at Heritage.
But exactly. But he kind of, you know, he kind of got lost, I feel like, with, you know, Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, all these other great young
John
guys.
John Rahm from that same
John
class.
John Rahm, exactly. They're all, you know, in that 24, 25 years. But when you hear a stat like that, Keeley, I mean, that screams that this guy could be an all-time great player.
I felt that, yeah, that stat in particular just kind of brought everyone back to the same mentality that they were in when he was in his last year as an amateur.
And it
because
was all the
remember
hype.
That? Yeah. That hype was insane. Huge. Like, this kid was the next coming, and then we've just had a couple unamazing seasons.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, right, there was a reason that we were talking about him like this. Because he, I mean, has a huge amount of potential and can convert.
Right. And part of the reason, I think we've maybe talked about this before, Joel, but he did take a while with, I mean, we all know he plays the single length irons. But then when he went to Cobra.
Yeah.
He had to kind of build, like, his own set, right? I mean, so that is that the do we give him excuse for that? I mean, is that kind of why it took
same,
him a little while?
It's the same math, though.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Even he had already gone through it once.
I think fortunate is you just mentioned all those guys like Spieth and Thomas. They've made the assimilation process look so easy. When you realize historically, it's really hard for guys under 26, 27 to really find success early on the PGA Tour. You know, he did have a few of his struggles. I think putting was the biggest one. Yeah. I mean, his putting was so bad he was even trying side saddle at one point. It really kind of drives home the fact of, you know, how bad the short game was. So, and even now, like, granted, as he showed at Ridgewood, he can putt well on occasion, but the season stats still show he's kind of shaky around the greens. But, man, once if he gets if you can find a long-term solution to what to do on the greens. I think you're looking at a top 10 player week in and week out.
Yeah. You, I think, Joel, you tweeted another stat, which was pretty amazing. In the last 13 months, he's won 3 times. And that's more wins than what was it, Rory, Ricky, and Spieth combined. That is nuts. I don't think anyone realizes that.
He's front of mind in that same way.
That's, I mean, now that also speaks to the fact that
Rory needs to win.
Rory needs to win more. Ricky really needs to win more. And Spieth now has gone over a year without a win himself. And we've kind of talked about that if the Ryder Cup points were just this year, Ricky and Spieth actually wouldn't have automatically qualified. So that just shows you that they have not had great years. But that's pretty amazing to even have 3 wins in a 13-month span. Now, nowadays is kind of a big deal.
I mean, just last year, this is a guy who would miss like 13 cuts in 16 straight weeks. So it really is shows you how far he's come. Like you mentioned, I mean, 3 wins is a really good career.
Right.
And he's done it in basically a calendar season. So first now in FedEx Cup standings, basically a lock to control his own destiny when it comes to East Lake. So, man, Bryson DeChambeau, FedEx Cup champion, something I don't think any of us had on the radar to start the season.
Another winner this past week, Keeley, was Brooke Henderson winning the CP Women's Open in Canada. And this was, I mean, Bryson, don't get me wrong, very popular player. This was the most popular win of the season, maybe of the year. I mean, this meant so much for Brooke Henderson to win in her native country. We've seen in the past how much the Canadian Open meant to Mike Weir. Even when he was a top 10 player in the world, he never could quite get it done. There was so much pressure on him. It seemed like there was almost more pressure than in a major. So how impressive was this win for Brooke, and how cool was that, you know, reception that she kind of got?
Yeah, it was incredible. And I think that the pressure that you talk about is kind of the most important thing when you're dealing with a player like Brooke playing at home in Canada. I mean, it's hard to kind of explain like what a big deal she is there, because she's very popular in America too, but the Canadians love Brooke Henderson.
She's huge.
And that's a really positive thing in a lot of ways, but that also brings on a ton of pressure, especially when you're playing at home. And I mean, she started the final round with a 1-stroke lead, which is by no means comfortable.
Right.
And to be able to like stick that out and ended up winning by 4, I mean, she was playing unbelievably. It was a really cool moment to watch. I mean, no Canadian woman has won that event since the 70s.
Wow.
So everybody was very ready for it, and for the year that she's had too. I mean, she has already won once, but like personally, she's had a very difficult year. Like, she left the Women's US Open to be with her family because her grandfather passed away, and then 4 weeks later she lost her other grandfather. So she's had like this really, she's only 20 years old, you know, like that's a lot to emotionally process while still being a competitive golfer. And to be able to kind of balance everything and come out on top in what she calls like the most important event on her calendar, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're not, to Canadians,
that's it
for them.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is a major. They treat it as such. What, you know, I know we've talked about this before. You mentioned she has the one other win this year. There's so few people, so few LPGA players with multiple wins on the season. It just seems it's such a weird year, and it's tough for anyone to really distance themselves from the pack.
She's now just one of, I think, 3 players to win multiple times this year, which is, I mean, when is the last time? We could probably find that stat, the last time that's happened. But no, it's created this very strange dynamic on the tour where it feels like anyone could win at any time, which in that way, it's like very hopeful. Like, yeah, I could win this week. But at the same time, that makes it impossible to win.
Right.
So there is no real like standout star on the LPGA right now. But I'm sure Canada would love for it to be Brooke.
Sure. Let's move back to the PGA Tour, and a couple stars, aging stars, finally made it official. The match, Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods. And it was part of this whole coordinated, Phil joins Twitter, we're like, what's going on? And then Tiger tweets about it. It was kind of awkward with the
kind of
quote the banter.
The dads on Twitter.
Right, exactly. But you know, now that this is finally, although I guess we still don't have like the actual time and date. It's still just Thanksgiving weekend. we're hearing the rumors on the pricing.
I mean, they still have to get Tiger's right driver in the photos, yeah. Let's be honest. Let's cross that bridge first.
Right, the promo image was obviously hastily done. But overall, you know, I know there's actually – I'm surprised at how much kind of blowback this event has gotten with people criticizing it. I understand that it does look like a money grab. It is. I mean, let's be honest. It is a money grab.
It's a money grab,
But I don't care.
Right. It's still kind of a cool thing. Right, Joel? I mean –
It is. It's
now you
Joel, look at him. Look at his eyes.
Yeah.
It's just in the sense of it's getting to. I am obviously anything Tiger related is gonna. You're looking at me so angrily right now, which is that
we don't have our fun.
You shouldn't be so angry wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
That's true. I am wearing a Hawaiian shirt today.
Could explain to you what this shirt looks like, I would, but it is distracting. Joel,
I'm just blown away by they're acting like this has never been done before. It's like
no, you're right.
Monday night matches.
Yep.
And then to be honest, they didn't really work out that well. So right. Actually, credit to Phil and Tiger for spinning this in a way that or making it more digestible than it was in the past. Right. I think it will be interesting. I guess just the current golf is so good right now that this doesn't need the extra fill in. Like when it comes to November, we can give it its proper due. But I mean, especially the way Tiger's been playing just on his own regard, I think that's noteworthy in itself. I don't need this extra. It just kind of reeks of, you know, like a two guys who are retired going against each other that you sometimes see in golf, you know, like that. Obviously, what is it, the Ozarks event that you see all those former legends. It kind of reeks of that a little bit. Like, these guys are still, I mean, not in their prime, but I mean, they're going to be on the Ryder Cup team. Right. They're still top 12 players in America. It just seems way too early for this type of thing to be happening. The pay-per-view thing, I understand why people are upset, again, because it does just scream money grab. Yeah. I think if there was a charity aspect, maybe that would get people a little bit more buy-in. Yeah. But I think it's also just something to complain about because we've known this was going to happen. They didn't really, besides making it official, all the details were kind of already known. So once the pay-per-view thing came out, just I think it was something for people to attack, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, and we don't call him Cold Water Beal for nothing. He's splashing and dumping cold water on this great event between Tiger and Phil. No, I agree. It's you know, it's weird because I feel like if this was in another sport, and it wouldn't happen, frankly, because like the NBA wouldn't let LeBron James just have a one-on-one with
Curry,
Kevin Durant or Curry, exactly. I mean, first of all, they could get injured. Their teams wouldn't let it happen. But these guys are independent contractors, and although it does seem like they kind of gave
there's a
little
reason. There's a reason the thing is $9 million instead of $10 million. Let's put it that way.
Exactly. They did give a little on that. They did pick a pretty dead weekend, although, you know, you have John Huggin and people out there complaining that it's happening at the same time as the World Cup of Golf, which, I mean, I'm sorry. It's just not a big deal. And I'm sorry. I mean, it's a good event. But also, that's happening in Australia. This is in Las Vegas. So it's not like it's even going to be at the same time. So, and Phil and Tiger have played in that event in the past, and they just don't anymore. But anyway, the point is I think it actually fills a little bit of a void. It's been 10 years since the Skins game, which was always – Thanksgiving weekend. Mm-hmm. It's been 10 years. Hasn't been a Skins game. Have you really missed it? No, but it was kind of something to watch. And again, Skins game was free. It wasn't pay-per-view or anything. But anyway, you can't really have this in other sports. So it is kind of weird because Tiger and Phil play against each other all the time. And they've been paired together and, you know, multiple times this year. So there's really not much, unless they really do something different, and that's what Tiger keeps saying. Oh, it's going to be different. We're going to do, you know, and Phil says, oh, we're going to do side bets and this and that. There's a little pressure on them to deliver, I think, because especially if people are going to pay $25 or whatever it is, they're going to want to see, you know, get something for their money.
I think it's easy to say that, but whatever they do, I think it's going to be great.
I do too. No, yeah. I know. But do you think it'll be great enough for them to keep this going? Because obviously they've both hinted that this is just the first of a series. It might not always be just them two. It might be teams.
That's I think that if it was just the two of them over and over again, like, we would get tired of it. But I think there is potential for creating different, I don't know, different teams or like bringing in just a different person playing against Tiger every time.
right. Well, yeah, it was funny. Brooks Koepka was asked about it, and he was like, he had no clue it was going to be on pay-per-view, and he basically said, yeah, I probably wouldn't pay for it. But then they were like, well, would you want to play in it? And he was like, I'll play someone for $10 million.
Of course, $9 million. Exactly. Like, yeah,
like, give me that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I think these guys are going to have a lot of their buddies, you know, saying, hey, guys, can you cut me
in on
this?
How do I get in on this? Yeah.
So in that way, they're brilliant. And I'm disappointed by the pay-per-view, but if we're going to be honest, we knew these guys are going to put up their own money, and this was probably the only way that they could raise that kind of dough to guarantee that they have that purse. No, Joel?
Other sports do that. Like,
yeah. No, yeah. No,
I mean, it's not uncharted territory.
No.
Exactly, and it's not like
they're treating it like a fight, like a big prize fight.
Yes, it is. It is a prize fight.
You always have
Let's
to
go.
Pay for those.
They are. It's
fight.
It will be interesting to see where this goes, because you're already hearing rumors about a co-ed event here in the future as well. Mm-hmm. I think you're really going to see it's a global play. Asia is really the big target in this, so I think the next iterations are going to be internationally based. I think you're going to see for years, especially this year the past 2 years, I should say, with the New Orleans event, people have asked, when are you going to see a co-ed event in professional golf? I think if they're really smart, I think this is the way they capitalize on that. Not just between Tiger and Phil, but maybe throw a couple other big names in there. But yeah, I'm sorry, I understand why people are excited, but come on, we still have like a couple more weeks of the playoffs and then the Ryder Cup. After that, then let's start talking Tiger Phil. Let's make sure Tiger's still okay at that point.
That's true.
Whoa.
That's true. I almost
Tiger's
wanted
gonna be
him
fine.
To miss the cut this past week.
Just to rest
just
up.
Just to get some rest. Because I knew he wasn't going to win, so what's the point
win
there?
Win or miss the cut. I love it.
But he drove it great. We don't need to talk about Tiger. We all saw it. He drove it great. He putted terribly. You know, he's not going to win the match putting like that. Let's put it that. He made 9 birdies over 4 days. I'm hoping these guys both make 9 birdies each during the match.
Oh, I mean, the way they're going to set that, Shadow Creek is not Pine Valley. Let's make it
that
way.
They're going to be setting up some funnels, getting the ball rolling. We're going to see multiple aces, hopefully.
There'll be a couple 59 watches.
Okay, I hope so. How much would you guys pay? Now, again, I know we work for Golf Digest, so it's tough to, like, we're going to watch it, and I'm going to expense it no matter what. But let's just say we couldn't do that. Like, in reality, Keely, it sounds like you would be willing to pay something, in particular just for this first matchup.
I would, but I would get a group of friends together.
Okay, fine, right.
And then we would each put $20 in, and it would be, I mean, so what, like $200?
Wow!
If you
so you
like
really
10 people?
Okay.
If you get 10 people,
so you're willing to
math,
put in 20 a person though.
20 a person.
Okay. So let's say usually these fights are what, like $50.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you would only need two and a half people to do it. So you basically.
I think the money's not a big deal.
It's not a big
Watch,
deal.
Like,
so you get 5 people, $10 each. That's no
boom,
big. Boom. Done.
You're done.
Right, Joel.
Well, here's the thing. I would say no.
Joel's like 5 cents.
However, it is during Thanksgiving, and by Friday, I think people are going to be really sick of their in-laws, so you'll do whatever you want to get
and
a distraction.
And you're with big groups of people anyway.
Right.
The number I've heard is $15 for the pay-per-view, and it seems like from a couple of people, they're
I heard it's 25, but...
I think you're... Yeah. I think, because let's be honest, this is still uncharted territory, and this is going to be a really big test for how much are people willing to pay for their content. And at least on this level, because boxing matches and I guess if you want to put wrestling in there, that's assumption, but nothing's ever really been done like this for golf. So at least in terms of paying for the viewing. So I think that you're going to see it go on the lower end rather than ask for $30 or $40.
Oh, absolutely. I think,
That's smart. You can't treat it as a big fight. I mean, although some of these like crappy fights get $50 still, right? And then the UFC stuff.
But even then, though, that's 4 or 5 hours because you have undercards. And right now, it's just.
But this is
going
to be 4 hours, at least 3 hours.
But like fans are used to paying to watch fights. Like fans aren't used to paying to watch golf, so they have to keep it low because not everyone's.
Yeah.
And more importantly, the big way that boxing model works is they really bank on bars and different restaurants buying that in and showing it to multiple people. They like a lot of their views aren't actually households, so
that might be
people
tough.
People aren't gonna very few bars that are gonna buy Tiger Phil, especially when there's a lot of football still on.
I don't know Stanford bars will be hopping.
I think people are gonna buy it.
I would pay at least 20. I'd say I'd pay even.
You would empty your bank account.
I would. Let's be honest.
You would, yeah.
No, it's funny though. Tiger was asked about it, and he kind of gave. It was a little bit of a smug answer. I mean, he just said like, they can afford it. Like golf fans can afford it if they want it. And he said, we spend money on all these fights. We buy all these fights, and he has a good point. But I spent money on one fight, and it was that Mayweather-Pacquiao fight a few years ago.
That
was
the only
biggest
one everyone
bust ever. That was the biggest waste of money. So I hope this is better than that, right? Yeah. I mean, that was like you had to buy that fight, and it was awful. So,
but even then, that didn't matter because like we did it too, but we had a big group of people.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you can still have fun.
It ended up costing you like $5.
Oh, well, I only had like three people.
Oh, we had like a whole party.
Alex is not as popular.
And
I always forget.
Not. And one of them, well, you know, it was Clippers Spurs game 7 beforehand. So
that
we
can go down
by myself.
Path.
That's
an amazing
day.
Game. What a great day. And one of my friends, shall remain nameless, has not pitched in yet for this fight.
Ooh.
So it ended up, I ended up spending $25 on that.
You know who you are.
Garbage. Yeah.
Get on Venmo.
Speaking of money and changes and everything else, the FedEx Cup playoffs are set to undergo huge changes for next year. And to discuss those changes, I talked with our Brian Wacker. So please have a listen to this as we Brian catches everybody up on all the changes that are to come to the FedEx Cup playoffs for next season. All right, I'd like to welcome in our own Brian Wacker, who is up in Boston up for the Dell Technologies Championship. Brian, how's it going, man?
I'm just trying to stay cool because it's about 1,000 degrees up here. I left Miami this morning, and it's like 15 degrees cooler in Miami, which, you know, all the geography majors out there, a lot closer to the equator than Boston, but it's brutal up here. But here we are, second leg of the playoffs, and ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, I want to talk obviously about the playoffs with you, but really I want to talk about next year's playoffs. You following up on the AP report yesterday about tweaks to the FedEx Cup playoffs that will possibly or probably begin in 2019. You did a great piece on some of these tweaks, and I just wonder maybe if you could fill in the golf fans on what changes we are expecting to happen.
Well, as you mentioned, the story originally broken by Associated Press writer Doug Ferguson, and effectively what it means is that come next year's Tour Championship, the Tour will do away with FedEx Cup points. They'll wipe them out, and you'll have the guy who is leading the FedEx Cup start the Tour Championship at 10 under par, and the 30th guy will be even par, and you'll have, guys, depending on their position, incrementally spread out between those two spots. So it really becomes much more volatile in a sense because, you'll have, for example, the first, the FedEx Cup leader would be 10 under, the second guy would be 8 under, and maybe the third, fourth, and fifth guy, 6 under. I think they're still working on some of those machinations, but effectively you'll have a shootout where the winner of the Tour Championship wins the FedEx Cup, which, of course, doesn't always happen. Going back to last year, perfect example when you had two different winners, Justin Thomas, of course, winning the FedEx Cup, and Xander Schauffele winning the Tour Championship, and for the second time, I believe, in the FedEx Cup history, just over a decade old. So it avoids an awkward scenario and creates some finality or some clarity, really, to the end of season, points race. At least that's what the Tour is hoping, that it sort of, away goes the whiteboard for that final event and the sort of combinations and everything that's got to happen for various scenarios to play out. So that goes away, and it just becomes, winner take all, effectively.
Yeah, no, you had a great line in your story. You were talking about the definition of playoffs, and you said Merriam-Webster makes no mention of NBC Golf Channel Steve Sands' whiteboard. And I think that was a great line because Because we're used to seeing that. We're kind of used to seeing it and him, you know, frantically trying to figure out all the combinations and everything. But you're right. I think it obviously is confusing for not only the average golf fan, but hardcore golf fans. I mean, it's just there's so many different possibilities on that final day. However, you know, you did mention that last year was one of those unusual or not unusual, but awkward situations where, you know, Xander Schauffele wins the tour championship, but he doesn't win the big $10 million bonus. But, you know, the 7 years before that, the winner of the tour championship had also won the FedEx Cup playoffs. So is this, I mean, you don't think this is a little bit of an overreaction to that? I mean, I get it. Now we'll guarantee that the winner will take both titles, but it really hadn't happened that often.
No, it hadn't, and I'm not sure that's the only reason behind it. I think there was more a reaction to seek clarity and understanding because in talking to various members of the Player Advisory Council and various other tour players and other sources within the tour, I think there was still this somewhat general confusion about the FedEx Cup, how exactly it worked. Mm-hmm. In fact, I ran a very informal poll on Twitter the other day to be asking people if they care about the FedEx Cup playoffs from the standpoint of the event as a whole or the series of events as a whole. And, you know, about 50% said yes, and about 50% kind of said either no or were indifferent about it. And mm-hmm. even a couple of percent even said they still don't understand it. So I think they're, you know, because you're right, with the whiteboard, which unfortunately we've had great fun poking fun at that with right. these over the years, of course. But I think that was completely confusing to viewers and really took away from the golf tournament. Now, is this the best solution? I don't know. Time will tell. I've got my thoughts on that, as do some other players, but I think really this was the tour's way of trying to make it easier to understand. Of course, the other thing mentioned in that story that you referenced was the fact that they brought in focus groups and statisticians and such to yeah. sort of flesh this whole thing out. And so I can just imagine a room full of people sitting around down in Ponte Vedra trying to sort of gauge whether they understand what will be this new format. And according to people I spoke with, it sounded like 80% of them do. So I think there is maybe potentially more clarity, but it still will be odd to me when you're going to be starting a golf tournament with guys already under par. As one player put it to me, it's sort of like your first 15, 20, 25 events, however many you play, are effectively your first round of a tournament.
Yeah, no, I that is going to be interesting. But you're right. Once it starts though, and you have those established scores, it will be easier to tell who wins both things. Obviously there's the famous story in 2011 when Bill Haas showed up to the trophy ceremony and nobody else was there. And he was like, wait, both these trophies are for me? He had no idea he won the $10 million bonus and the FedEx Cup and all that. So that's pretty bad when the people who are even playing don't understand. Now, I know they had made it a little simpler in the past few years with the, you know, if you were in the top five, you you won the Tour Championship, you also won the FedEx Cup. This new system is kind of still going a little with that, right? I mean, like you said, it's going to be a staggered thing with these scores. So anyone in the top five, and let's be clear, there are still points all through the season and through the first two events of the playoffs, right? It's just, right, in the Tour Championship, they go away. But do those top five guys, they're going to get an edge still, I think, right, in the Tour Championship?
That's the hope. The Tour, with, you know, those top five guys will obviously be you'll have the leader, of course, and then you'll have the four guys behind him will be the closest to his lead mm-hmm. going into that tour championship. So they obviously would have the best chance of winning, but I still think there's some details that need to be worked out about it. But it's strange to me from the standpoint, Alex, I don't know how you feel. You know, you could theoretically have a guy win, say, three, four, five times in a year, maybe a playoff event or two playoff events. And then all of a sudden he goes to Eastlake with only a two-shot lead.
Right.
Starting off the tournament, which doesn't seem like that much of an advantage.
Right. No, I agree. That's always, though, a problem in any sport if you have someone that has a dominant regular season, though. You know, I mean, you know, if sure. it, like, you know, if the Red Sox end up winning 115 games this year or something, but then they get knocked out in the first round of the playoffs, we're going to say, well, they probably were really the best team. They just didn't do it in the playoffs. And that, I know, I don't like to see that happen. Well, I'd like to see the Red Sox lose, obviously, but I don't like to see that happen in general. I like to see kind of the teams or the players who were the best throughout the whole season get rewarded. But on the same token, it is a separate competition, the playoffs itself. So, you know, you could see someone, yeah, you could definitely see someone just win the one event, kind of pull, you know, a Bill Haas again type like thing in the tour championship and win. I don't know. Do you think that's fair or what are your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, look, I think their overall goal was trying to get to a feeling where, as one player explained it to me, on the player advisory council, basically a scenario where, you know, when you've got a guy who is very clearly the player of the year, or you've got, maybe got two or three guys who are in that conversation, that the tour wants to see those guys, barring some unusual circumstances or unusual finish, really at least have the best chance of winning the FedEx Cup. In other words,
sure,
having the player of the year as the FedEx Cup champion, it sort of, you know, sort of makes sense, right?
Yes,
in the conversation that we're having here,
right,
in talking about best regular season and being rewarded and so forth. That said, sure, yeah, look, you could have a Bill Haas type scenario here from the standpoint of you can have a guy start way back in the pack, you know, 8-10 shots back, let's say, and just goes gangbusters for a week and wins the tour championship and in turn wins the FedEx Cup. So to me, that's, you know, look, it's weird because it's not really a true playoff, which is, you know, speaks to that point I made in the story, which is probably just a bad term for the tour to have used, really. I mean, you look at the European Tour and how they do it with the Race of Dubai.
Right.
Makes
right.
a little more sense. You can look at other sports, NASCAR, et cetera, where there's really no mention of playoffs, where I think people in this country have this view of playoffs. And I think the tour is trying to serve two masters in that regard, the players and then the fans, and those two masters have very different viewpoints of what that should be in terms of the playoffs.
No, you're totally right. The LPGA also, the race to the CME Globe,
right.
It's not, you're right, it's not a playoff mention because, you know, playoffs, you lose, you go home. That's what we all know. And obviously that's not the case here. In these playoffs, you don't even have to play to advance. It's, you know, you miss the cut, you still advance. So it's, you're right. That's where there's always been a little bit of a disconnect, I think. You know, we talk about things that will seem weird though. I think maybe that's getting lost in all this. And you mentioned it in your story. The weirdest part of all of this to me is that the winner of the tour championship next year, even if they get staked to a 10-shot lead, will get credit for winning a golf tournament. I mean, this is like, you know, a handicap. It's like,
you're not the first person to bring this up to me.
That is nuts. No. That is absolutely nuts. And that's what's going to happen. It's going to count as an official win?
It's crazy because it would count as an official win, and with an official win comes a whole bunch of you know, things. Now, look, of course, if you get to that point, you know, a lot of that stuff is moot. Some of that stuff, anyway, is moot.
Right.
Of course, anyway, you're going to have a tour card for the next season.
Right.
You're going to go to the Masters because you're going to be the FedEx Cup champion. So things like that are sort of a moot point. But
that's true.
You're right. The fact that it counts as an official win is sort of odd because, really, if you think about it, you're staking this 10-shot lead. So really, you know, somewhere between 0 and 10, you know, you're effectively beating a field of about, what, 15, 10 guys?
Exactly.
It's what it comes down to, which, you know, we sort of make fun of Tiger Woods' Hero World Challenge and the fact that world ranking points are for a field that has 18 guys, including the host. And, you know, this is, I think, probably worse from the standpoint of, you know, you're spotting the leader at 10 shots, and that to me is completely, completely bizarre.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned Tiger's event or different events like that. That doesn't count as an official PGA Tour win for him. That's, you know, he has the 79 wins. He's won that event, what, 5 or 6 other times. Those don't count. But you're right. You take, you know, people already kind of questioned some of these limited field events. You know, do they, they're probably easier to win than against, you know, a field of 150 guys. You have, but you're starting already with just 30 guys. And now you mentioned, you're right, you're really effectively cutting it at least in half. If you're the guys who are 10 shots back, I mean, I know you have four rounds to make it up, but let's be honest, like that's probably not going to happen. So yeah, you're right. You're really only beating a handful of guys, and you're going to get credit for some, as much as someone who beat 155 other guys at a regular tour event. It just seems weird in terms of, again, and like you said, it doesn't really matter for some of those bigger things, but just from a statistical archival purpose,
sure,
it seems weird when you start to, you know, if guys start to rack up wins in this event going forward.
Well, and I'll bring up your favorite player, Alex. No. Let's talk Tiger Woods, because, you know, there's a guy, now he's got one record, I think that's certainly within reach, and that's Sam Snead's 82
yep.
victories.
Right.
Let's say that next year's Tour Championship ends up being his 83rd career
yes.
victory. I mean, really, we're counting that as the one that
right.
to break Sam Snead's record? Now,
right.
You could question some of Sam's
sure.
victories among those
sure.
two as well, but you're right. To me, it's just a completely odd way to go about it. I mean, you can look at it from all sorts of angles. From the standpoint of, you mentioned the guys who will be 8-10 shots back. You know, after two rounds, if they're still 8 or 10 back or more, you know, how much are they really playing for? And how much, you know, are they really trying to move up the leaderboard there? Because at that point, there's really no incentive or very little incentive outside of maybe a few points or a few dollars for these guys. So all the way to the fact of, as you mentioned, archival purposes, having this, you know, count as an official victory just feels strange. And I can tell you this, that in reporting this story, talking with a few sources behind the scenes on this, that was a major sticking point with the tour from the standpoint of, They were really uneasy, or it maybe took a while to get to that point.
Right.
They were not necessarily comfortable, or there's at least some uncertainty as to whether that should count as an official win. But I think when you look at all the things that go along with it, i.e. being FedEx Cup champion, perhaps they felt like, and again, this part is just speculation, that, you know, sure, you want to have your FedEx Cup champion have an official win, have that count as an official win, you know, to give it some gravitas. But
mm-hmm.
you're right, it's completely odd that you're essentially talking about beating a field of what ultimately amounts to 10 or 15 guys.
Yeah, and it's just like a club championship using a handicap. I mean, it's like a net
sure.
score almost. It that is bizarre. You mentioned what they're playing for also. Among the changes that you had in your story is a increase of the bonus to the winner from $10 to $15 million. That's pretty juicy.
That is a hefty increase. Obviously,
yeah.
That's a nice, as these guys call it, a nice ROI there. Nice
right.
But you know, look, I think that was one of the other things that came out of all of these discussions, was the fact that the tour and even the players felt like they needed a bigger end-of-season splash.
Right.
Certainly $15 million is nothing to sneeze at, even for these guys. It raises a lot of eyebrows, gets a lot of attention. So this provides a bit more of a splash. In that way, it's a little bit sexier, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a big number.
But is it, you know, it always was kind of like this anyway, when it was 10 million. And again, it does make sense that they would increase it eventually, because it's been 10 million since the inception in 2007. So it's about time that it kind of went up. But isn't it weird that one tournament you get? Now, I know you can make the case that if you win a major with all the endorsements and everything that you'll accumulate over the next few years, that might end up being worth 20 million or something. But other than maybe the four majors, that this one event, again, versus a very limited field, now we've made even more limited, is now worth so much more money than any other event. It doesn't that just seem a little odd?
It is odd. There's no question about it. But this is also the tour's baby. You know,
right.
This is
right.
This is the biggest deal they've got going. You know, outside the Players' Championship in terms of events, which is, of course, their biggest, their flagship event, this now really kind of surpasses that,
right?
At least monetarily, because this is a huge number we're talking about, disproportionate to the number of players in the field,
yeah.
Disproportionate to other tournaments and what that pays. So this really elevates, I'm sure, in the tour's eyes, the significance of the event when you've got such a big prize up for grabs.
Yeah, disproportionate is the word. I mean, you're right. You mentioned the Players, and the Players is a lucrative purse, but the winner of the Players gets, you know, $2.1 million. The winner of the Tour Championship is going to essentially get $16 million. We're talking about eight times what the flagship event for the PGA Tour winner gets. It's going to be eight times that. That seems a lot. That seems like a lot.
It does. There's no way around it. And again, you're talking about a small field event. Granted, I get it. I understand that you're rewarding a season-long race, but you're still talking about, effectively, at the end of the day, those last two rounds, really guys that have a chance to win the golf tournament and effectively the $15 million, or if that ends up being the final number, it's a very small number. So, there were other ideas that were kicked around throughout this process, one of which included a possible Monday finish on Labor Day with a handful of those top finishers at the Tour Championship in a match play format. That had been sort of kicked around, probably about a year ago and really never revisited since. But there have been other ideas as well. But, for some reason, this seems to be the one that won out. And, it's a huge payday.
Yeah.
And I'm sure in the tour's eyes, elevates its end of season that much more.
Yeah, and obviously with the different schedule, this will wrap up over Labor Day, kind of before football gets underway, so that they'll like that as well, a little more attention. What you say, these are all expected changes. From your reporting, what would change any of this? And, when you say expected, is this... is this pretty much a done deal, all these changes we've been discussing?
Yeah, this is a done deal from what I'm hearing from multiple sources within the organization and within golf that are familiar with all the details and particulars, that this is effectively a done deal. And I wouldn't be surprised if we heard an announcement from the tour within a couple weeks about it, perhaps at the Tour Championship. Often Jay Monahan gives his state of the tour, the commissioner, gives the state of the tour address, if you will, or meeting with reporters that week. So it wouldn't shock me then. It would make a lot of sense if we hear an announcement. But, from my understanding, other than maybe some details still to be finalized, some small details, I think the big parts of this deal are done and ready to go.
Yeah. Speaking of done deals, I just want to get your thoughts on Bryson DeChambeau. It seems like he's a lock now, or at least should be, for the Ryder Cup team. Or is that what you kind of think as well after his impressive win at Northern Trust?
I mean, he's got to be, right? I mean, you look at where he was on the points list going into that, and then he goes out and wins. I think it would be awfully difficult to leave him off the team right now when he just won. So, the way I look at it is that Tiger and Phil take up two spots, Bryson takes up another spot, and then really it comes down to that fourth spot where there's a few guys kind of jockeying for position. You know, Matt Kuchar was thought to be, a lock probably at one point, but, haven't really played very consistently or very well of late. You have to look at, obviously, Tony Finau and how well he has played of late.
Sure.
Not only doing it alongside the captain, Jim Furyk, with the 10-birdie round at the PGA Championship, but, of course, coming in second last week.
Right.
And a bunch of other high finishes in majors. Kevin Kisner, I think, is maybe still in that conversation as well. But I think you're looking at, maybe Xander Schauffele as well. A few guys, really three, four guys, fighting for one spot, and it really kind of plays out here over the next week or two.
Yeah. Now, another guy who was maybe thought to be in that conversation after winning at Wyndham was Brant Snedeker, and then he withdraws with the back spasms. Then you have, obviously, Ricky Fowler withdrawing again for a second straight week. How concerned would you be if you were Captain Jim Furyk, in particular about Fowler's oblique injury? And who knows? Maybe that does open up, not that you want it to, but that could open up another spot, I guess.
Well, the good news for Furyk, of course, is that the Ryder Cup is still about a month away, so sure. there is time for Ricky, even if he doesn't play between now and then,
right.
to heal up. Now, that said, look, you'd certainly like him to play and see where he's at. He's already on the team. If he were unable to start, of course, then they could sub someone in and have an extra pick there. But I fully expect Ricky to be healed and ready to go at the Ryder Cup just over a month from now. I don't think it's that serious of an issue where he would miss even the next two starts. Of course, this year he gets the extra week, the bye week in the playoffs after this week's tournament up here at TPC Boston, then the right. BMW Championship, and then on to East Lake. So he gets an extra week in there this year to rest up. So that should help, one would figure.
Sure, and he contended at the PGA even with this injury. So you have to
right.
think that he could probably, you know, if he could play, he wants to play in the Ryder Cup. We've seen how much he enjoys that event. What are your thoughts about this week? Obviously, you do have Bryson DeChambeau in that pole position right for now with the FedEx Cup points lead. Is there anybody else that you kind of have your eye on in particular this week, or maybe someone who's looking to, a Tony Finau-like guy trying to solidify his spot on the Ryder Cup team as well?
Yeah, I don't even think a Tony Finau-like guy. I think Tony Finau would be a fascinating guy to watch this week. Should play well here. But all of those guys, I think, that you mentioned in terms of the Ryder Cup, I'm fascinated to see how Xander Schauffele does. He's had a terrific year. And Kevin Kisner and so forth. So I would look to some of those guys. And, of course, Tiger Woods on back for another week and right in the heart right now of a very busy stretch for him. So
yeah.
I'm curious to see how his body holds up. Obviously did not putt well at all last week at the Northern Trust. This is a tournament he's played well at before, so mm-hmm. I would expect him to putt better this week. But again, we're in the middle of a very long, tiring, busy stretch for Tiger. So I'm curious to see how his body and his game holds up this week and really the rest of the playoffs.
Sure. For the record, I said, yes, I do care about the FedEx Cup playoffs on your Twitter poll. I saw Rich Beam chime in and say that you probably said meh. I'm guessing that was what you would have answered.
No, look, I do care about the FedEx Cup playoffs. I just wish they were maybe constructed a little bit differently. Uh-huh. A little more creatively. But I do think, I think the FedEx Cup playoffs have done a great thing from the standpoint of I'm not sure I care so much about who wins the $10 million, and I'm not sure that many fans really do, as the polls seem to indicate, but the fact that you can get the fields that they get for these four events, soon to be three events, who wouldn't want that? I mean,
exactly.
You're talking about,
yeah.
you know, some of the best of the best. So to me, that's really the ultimate goal of the FedEx Cup playoffs, is to bring together those best players. And from that standpoint, it has been a tremendous success in its 10 years. And I do think it has elevated in stature over these 10-plus years now to a more significant accomplishment than it was, say, maybe even 5 years ago. So to Rich, I said no. I actually would have said yes, I do care.
Okay.
Not from the standpoint of so much the $10 million and so forth, just more of you get four really good fields and good tournaments.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And the changes that are expected now, would that make you even more interested next year, would you say?
No.
Okay.
It really would, because okay. it just would create just another money grab at the end of it. But again, we're talking three good fields, so effectively three good tournaments. And the important thing to me is wrapping up before Labor Day, which they accomplish. And that is probably maybe the biggest thing, because at this point of the year, I think we're all fatigued somewhat.
Right.
And taking a break, I think overall, for the health of the game, for the health of the fans and their interest and so forth, I think that is probably the wisest decision they've made in all of this.
Sure. Well, we'll all look forward to seeing what happens this week. Obviously, it's a Friday start with the Monday Labor Day finish. But Brian, Thursday night is our big fantasy football draft. I just told you, obviously, Odell Beckham is my keeper. I'm feeling pretty good. Who's your keeper?
You know, I can't even think, Alex. I don't even know who it is off the top of my head, because I'm so focused on golf.
You're
right
so
now.
Focused. And or your team is that bad.
I don't like to reveal my pre-draft strategies ahead of time. My war room is will be ready to go up at the Renaissance place, actually just in the shadows of the Patriot Stadium. So it will be a big night, and I look forward to another season.
Yeah. By the way, is it TPC Boston? I unfortunately haven't been up there. It looks like a beautiful place, but it's not even near Boston. I was Google mapping it today. It would be like calling Bethpage Black TPC New York City, right? I mean, it's not near Boston. It's like 40 miles away.
No.
Yeah.
Look, you're probably closer to New York City and Bethpage than TPC Boston is to Manhattan, to Boston.
Right.
We're actually closer to Providence, Rhode Island, a different state. And most of the players and caddies and media and everybody else tends to stay in Providence.
Wow.
Because it's actually closer than staying in Boston. So, but look, yes, you're correct. TPC Boston, wonderful venue, and should be a terrific event again. And huge golf crowd will be here. They turn out every year, and even though Dell Technologies is going away as the sponsor, and this will sort of be an every other year event under the Northern Trust flag.
Right.
It's terrific because that they were able to keep Boston because it's such a popular event, and you'll see that reflected in the crowd, I think, this week.
Yeah, definitely. And it is a venue that produces a good finish usually and everything else. So, yeah, Brian, thank you for coming on today. Enjoy the rest of the week out there, and we will talk soon.
Sounds good.
All right, man. Take care. Thanks to Brian for joining us. He's going to have a busy week, obviously, in Boston. Joel, what do you make of this change? It's the most unusual part to me, obviously, and I said this to Brian, is that someone will get credit for winning a PGA Tour event despite starting with a 10-under handicap. It's very bizarre.
I'll at least give the tour credit for having the creativity because the last couple of years people have proposed the shootout format, something very similar to the staggered scoring. I'm with you. It's really hard to imagine in an NCAA tournament game where the one seed starts out with a 20-point advantage over the 64 seed, just because it doesn't. I don't think that many people really had a problem with Xander winning the Tour Championship, but Thomas winning the FedEx Cup. That's how playoffs work. You're not supposed to really be rewarded for. I guess it's their vision of what they want the FedEx Cup to be. And if that's the case, just reward it at the end of the regular season.
Yeah.
And not have this playoff format. So, not to play into this whole, cold water persona, but
truth.
I appreciate what the Lynx are doing to tinker with it. I think, to be honest, they even haven't officially announced it yet. I think they could just be throwing it out there to feel how people will reaction. The reaction has been honestly pretty negative to this point. So I think even some of the tour guys have answered with the question face emojis and aired their own grievances toward it. So I'm not totally behind it.
Okay. Well, interesting. You know, it's funny because it's basically, like I said, it's like a handicap. It's like a net tournament almost. And speaking of which, we did pretty well, Joel. Team Golf Digest. Keely knew we had to bring this up. Team Golf Digest, Joel Beal, myself, Christopher Power, Steve Hennessy. We were in a media outing at Bethpage Black previewing the 2019 PGA Championship, which, as we all know, will be in May next year in New York. And out of 16 foursomes, we not only won, we won by 8 shots, the gross, not the net. The net we'd be called sandbaggers, never allowed back at the place. But we tied for the net, but the gross is what it's all about, right, Joel?
I mean, it's I just feel bad for the rest of the night. What do we call it? The bloodbath at Bethpage?
The bloodbath at Bethpage, yeah. We have the match in November, and then the bloodbath at Bethpage was in August.
I'm pretty sure we earned actual invitations to the PGA Championship. So I think we got exemptions.
Yeah, we'll have to see.
While I was here, work, you guys are out there.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Ridiculous.
Tough. But no, Keely, but you had your own golf last week I want to ask you about. On Tuesday, you had a qualifier.
Why would you guys get to talk about your success and then you make me talk about my failures?
You played okay. What?
Too many
bogeys. What did you, the mid-am?
I played in a mid-am qualifier, which was I was trying to figure out, like, my last competitive round, because one of the girls I was playing with was like, oh, like, whatever, what other events have you played in this summer? Right. I'm like, oh, you play in other events?
Yeah.
What?
Right,
like,
right.
You're prepared?
Right.
So, yeah, it was, I mean, it was really good to have to, like, you know, focus and right. try and play competitively for 18 holes. It was very difficult. It got a little scary down the stretch. My ball striking, whoa, I don't know what happened. It was early on, I was making, like, bad bogeys. Mm-hmm. Coming in, unreal bogeys.
Really?
Bogeys from places yeah, you wouldn't believe. But yeah, I'm a second alternate, so
okay.
if you guys want to like go out and you know,
I'll say you don't have to say anything at this point, but just if you just wink,
you,
that's,
yeah,
that's
you
solid.
Know what to do.
Yeah, that's solid. No, that takes a lot of guts to actually really compete. I mean, we were just hit and giggle, you know, shambling.
And you had each
stuff.
Other. Yeah,
you were out there.
And no practice round.
Yeah, and you had you ever played there before?
No.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah. It was, yeah.
So, good, no, tough. Good for you. Way tough to go, way to go.
Thanks, guys.
Speaking of unfamiliar situations, our best one-day story goes to Keegan Bradley because he was in the final group. Now, granted, Bryson DeChambeau had a four-shot lead over him going to the final group, but he said, I'm so excited. I'm back in the final group. I'm back in the hunt at a tournament. This is a guy who hasn't won in 6 years on tour, which is crazy. Obviously, we know the anchor band hurt his career. But, well, he got a taste of what it's like again. He went from 62 on Saturday, course record, to a 78 on Sunday. Wow. And I know this hurts you, Keely, because it's Vermont.
Hate to see it.
You're Vermont.
He's back in Vermont,
Vermont
like today.
Boy.
Right
really?
Now. Yeah, it's his charity thing.
No.
Oh, well, yeah.
He's doing good work.
Let's
but
go Vermont.
Unfortunately, he went from second place to like 34th place. Was this tough to watch, Keely?
It was. I mean, it was just so – I think that the positive outweighed the negative. Like, the 62 was so good that, the last round didn't hurt me personally that
okay.
badly. Like,
right.
you never want to see that.
All right.
But at the same time, like, it's been so long that he's, like, even been near the conversation.
Right.
That it was – I don't know. I thought it was good.
Okay. Well, cold water
fun.
Beal, you want to
yeah,
splash some water on?
Listen, I think
moods.
We both beat his score, right, when we played
oh
at Ridgewood.
Oh, my
so.
God.
No, I definitely didn't.
Yeah.
You did.
No way
you
Alex
did.
Shot 77
I did not.
At
I did not
Ridgewood.
There. Not that day. Not with that rough.
We were playing from about the same tees, though.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, no, that was definitely – no, it just shows you, again, all these
it
guys
– how hard it is.
How hard it is. This guy's a major champion. You know, he goes a few years, winless drought, gets back in the mix, 62. But again, Sunday pressure is just so different.
It's a different game
anything.
When you're playing
yeah.
in the final group.
Pros are just like us. This week, we have a couple great examples. We have Patty Harrington trying to sneak off to take a leak, I think, in the bushes at the Czech Masters. And the cameraman just, like, follows him, stalking him, won't let him out of his
Gotta
sight.
Gotta get the shot.
And they finally have like this little standoff, and Harrington just gives this smirk, like, "Come on, dude, like, that's tough."
I was amazed by what people were giving Potty crap for that. Like, if they never played golf,
yeah,
like, unfortunately,
I mean,
it's.
I don't know what it's like for women, for ladies on the course, but for guys, this is like you do it a couple times a round.
Oh, I know.
You play with guys.
I play
you
with you guys.
Yeah.
You guys pee everywhere. I don't know what the issue is.
It's not that bad.
But it's
you make it like we're animals. But, yeah, no, but it's definitely, you know, it's one of those things. You're outside. They don't have bathrooms every other hole.
Yeah, no fooling.
Yeah. If they did, we'd use
every
the bathroom.
Every female golfer saw that and was like, deal with it, buddy. Like,
well, look, I feel bad for Patty because he ended up losing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if he had to hold it, a little uncomfortable situation
and
for him.
And cost him a couple shots?
It might have cost him a couple
oh
shots.
Oh, my God.
I feel bad.
There is a great article from a few years ago called Taking Relief by Steve Rushing, interviewing
yes.
players on
yes.
this exact subject. So I recommend all of our listeners
yeah.
to go read it, check it out, because yep. Players really do talk about it at certain turns. It really is this plight of not being able to find
yep.
a bathroom, and it really is a struggle. So Potty really just it was testament to this plight.
Yeah, definitely. And then you have Tyrrell Hatton, who was putting so poorly. He was putting almost as bad as Tiger. and after his third round, he decides to jump in his courtesy car, go over to a nearby Golf Galaxy and buy a putter. And the next day, he spent $149 plus tax.
Great deal.
The next day, and he bought a Ping putter, which he's
sponsored
Ping,
by.
Stayed
right,
on brand.
Right, stayed on brand, very on brand. he goes out and shoots 64, matching his best round of the year, and he ends up taking a check for over $100,000. So it was well worth it.
I'm still confused by this. Why didn't he just go to the Ping truck?
Well, the trucks are they leave on Tuesday or Wednesday, and there was no one
around. No, like I have such a tough time believing there's no one.
Mm-hmm.
There's
or that he doesn't have a backup.
No one from Ping is there.
Yeah, like, yeah. I feel like he could have gotten a free putter if he showed a little patience.
Right? Like I think that's the key. That like he's a little hot-headed. He's just like, no, I'm going to Golf Galaxy. I'm doing it. And it paid off.
Well, it paid off because again, there's in the playoffs, there's no time to rest. I mean, he needed to make the change.
I mean, Golf Galaxy they need to monetize on this as quickly as possible, right?
Like, yeah,
that's commercial. It's just made itself.
Right. Imagine if he went in full gear, just straight from the course, and he's putting on one of those like little synthetic greens in the middle of the stop. Like, I think it's amazing.
Hatton's a top 25 player in the world, but it's unfortunate that it wasn't, because if it was an American, can you imagine like if someone like Spieth just showed up at a Golf Galaxy, you'd be like, is that Jordan Spieth? I just saw him on TV like 20 minutes ago. That would have been great if someone like was actually at the store and tweeted, hey, I'm pretty sure Hatton's testing putters here.
Yeah. There's a guy who goes on my golf trip every year, and he's bought putters numerous times on their trip. You know, bad round. I feel like he almost does it for show. It's stupid. He walks into a pro shop after a bad round. He's a terrible putter to begin with. So it's like, dude, it doesn't matter. And then he just, you know, plunks down $250 on a putter. Because, you know, they're charging you more, obviously, in a pro shop at a course, too, than if you go to a Golf Galaxy. And then he puts the next day, and it's like, he's just as bad. So at least Hatton, you know, shoots a 64. So good for him. All right. We have, obviously, we mentioned the Dell Technologies Championship this week up at TPC Boston, which, as I joked about with Brian Wacker, is nowhere near Boston. But it looks like a beautiful course. It usually produces a nice finish. Guys, Keely, I'll start with you. Who do you – I know you had a big – you picked Brooks, right, at the
I picked
PGA?
Brooks. I picked Justin Thomas.
You're red hot. You're red hot.
I'm so hot right now.
You're hot. It's ridiculous. Too bad we don't have any money on this.
Yeah, too bad.
So who you got this week?
So now it's going to end.
Yeah, you have
that
no
– now that we talked about it. Sorry, Tony Finau.
Oh, too much pressure on Tony.
I know, but I don't know. He's just – he's been there. Like the entire season, he's gonna win. If not this week, then next week. And then also, do you see Xander Schauffele is at 80-1?
I did see that.
I love that.
It's a little low.
That's nice. Yeah. Jump on that.
Yeah. It's a guy who obviously won the Tour Championship last year. We're still talking about him as a possible captain's pick. You know, didn't win this year.
But so many top threes.
Yeah.
Like he's
played
he's
well
been,
at the
British
Open,
was crazy.
Yeah, at the U.S. Mm-hmm. Open.
Players' Championship as well.
Players, the big events, he seems to show up. No, I agree. 80-1 is an absurd price for him. Joel?
As one of the favorites, I think Jason Day is the guy you have to look at. It's funny, as for someone who's had two wins this year, I feel like we haven't really talked about him that much over the past two or three months. But that being said, he's been really good, has a nice track record at TPC Boston. I think you're going to see that continue. If you're looking for more of a dark horse, though, Billy Horschel is quietly starting to come around again. This is the course where he's had success in the past. Obviously, this is where he started that run where he won in 2014 to the FedEx Cup. So I think the way he played at Ridgewood really shows signs of coming in hot to Boston.
Yeah, no, it's funny. People forget that Billy Horschel didn't win that year.
Finished second, and then
choked on that last hole. He chunked, but then he went second, win, and took it all. I'm going with Adam Scott. Former winner here at TPC Boston. It was actually the first year they played it 15 years ago when he was just a young gun, up and comer. Obviously, you know, the last couple years haven't been great for him, but the last couple tournaments have been. Mm-hmm. He's finally had his first top fives of the season at the PGA when he came so close to winning. And then, obviously, this past week at the Northern Trust, T5. More impressive, he actually led the field at Ridgewood in strokes gained putting, which
ooh.
How many times have we said that about Adam Scott ever? So he's won here.
There could be something onto that two-putter thing.
That's right. And it's not even like he's even using the second putter. That was what was great. They asked him about that. He's got the second putter in there, and he's like, well, from outside of 25 feet, I might use it. But then he didn't use it. Mm-hmm. So he's just – anyway. Yikes. Whatever, it's working.
It works,
It's doing whatever. I definitely like Adam this week. And no, it's funny you mentioned Xander Schauffele because, 80-1, you know, we're talking about, there's only 100 players in the field. So automatically this is a third less than like a typical tour event with the 156. Mm-hmm. So your odds should get better, not, you know, go down.
Worse.
And 80-1, I think he's pretty strong there. Also, I wanted to mention, we mentioned Tiger's putting briefly, but just how bad it was. He was 79th out of the 80 players who made the cut in strokes gained putting. Joel, should he go to Golf Galaxy and get a putter?
Absolutely.
Well, apparently he needs to go to the optometrist, according to Brandel Chamblee. Apparently he has – you saw that?
The what? Say again?
Did you see Brandel Chamblee's comments on this? Apparently Tiger's getting too old. It's his eyesight that's causing the putting issues.
He's had the LASIK before, though, right?
Don't bring facts into this. That's all right. Made for a great headline.
It's time for another laser surgery.
Laser surgery.
All right. Well, guys, it's been fun. Joel, congrats again on our big win. Keely,
I feel like we need a separate podcast.
We might.
You guys could do a whole
series. We'll get Steve and Chris on it.
You could spend half an hour on each hole.
I already brought our trophy to the office, basically because my wife doesn't want it in the house.
Good for her.
She's
a smart woman.
And I did wear a Hawaiian shirt in part in celebration. I don't know. That doesn't really even mean anything.
That's just how good of a mood you're in right now. You're on Hawaiian time at the moment.
Yeah. All those Magnum PI commercials seeping into my head.
Oh my God.
CBS Golf. Anyway, all right, guys. It was a lot of fun. Thanks to Brian for joining us. Thanks to you for listening. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already, and check back next week to see who our guest is.